It's a new year again, and many of you have probably already made some resolutions. I know I have. We all want to look and be our best. But sometimes we may not feel that way on the inside. We may have challenges in our life, problems and difficulties that make us feel small, insignificant, and inadequate. Maybe, for example, you're still wrestling with your fitness or weight goals and wondering why you haven't progressed as quickly as you thought you would. Or perhaps your family has been fighting, you just got back from the holidays and it wasn't the best experience. Or maybe your spouse isn't listening to you or doing what you ask him to do. Maybe you're trying to find love or find love again and nothing's happening. It could be that the health report you just received is making you nervous, has got you worried for yourself or a loved one. The loan didn't go through. The new business you dreamed of building just doesn't seem to be taking off. Whatever it is, there are challenges in our lives where we can start to feel like maybe what we're doing doesn't matter, that we're not making a difference after all. These are common feelings that I suspect all of us have experienced from time to time in our lives. And we experience them when we buy into the lie of the world and we start seeing ourselves through the eyes of the world and not through the eyes of God. We view ourselves often in a negative light. So today I want to talk with you about how God sees you. God sees you very differently. When I was a young boy growing up in Atlanta, the big department store in downtown, they used to have a live 70-foot Christmas tree every year. I thought our tree was gigantic at 16 or 18 feet, whatever it is. This was 70 feet, live Christmas tree. And every year at the annual lighting ceremony, hundreds and thousands of people would come, and it was shown on live television. But for me, as a young boy, the holy grail of the holidays was what was on the inside of that department store. They called it Rich's Wonderland of Toys. And more specifically, Priscilla the Pink Pig. Priscilla the Pink Pig was a train ride for young children that would circle the ceiling of the toy department so you could look down on all the delights and decide what you were going to ask Santa for. And it also proved that pigs indeed can fly. But I truly wanted to go every year. I'd heard about Priscilla the Pink Pig. It was my dream to go, but I hadn't gone. But one year, when I was 6 years old, my mother finally took me. And let me say, it was everything that it was cracked up to be. Priscilla was amazing. It was Christmas magic. I loved it. But when the train stopped and I got off, I couldn't find my mother anywhere. The crowds were so big and I was so small. There were people everywhere. And until I spotted my mom's face among the huge number of people there, I was very frightened. I felt lost in the crowd. Have you ever felt that way? Lost in the crowd. Maybe believing the lie that you're just one small, insignificant person among so many people on the planet. What difference could you make? Don't buy into that lie, because God sees you differently. God sees you as his unique, wondrous, amazing creation. A one-of-a-kind, a masterpiece that he has given incredible gifts to for you to carry out his plan and his purpose for your life. 2,000 years ago, when Jesus was born, there were some people who thought that he was just one among many newborn babies. We just celebrated Christmas, and yes, there were the shepherds and the angels, and they knew something was different. But the folks back in Jerusalem, they weren't so sure. This Jesus person just seemed to be one of many baby boys. That's what Herod thought. King Herod was the ruler of the land at that time, and he was an extremely cruel and very paranoid man. So paranoid that he had his favorite wife and two of his sons put to death on suspicion of treason. His brother-in-law, a prominent Jewish leader, also suffered a similar fate, an accident made to look like a drowning. And on his deathbed, King Herod ordered thousands of Jewish nobles rounded up, brought to his personal stadium, and put to death, executed, so that the people that he governed, he wanted to ensure that the people he governed, who actually despised him and would have happily danced on his grave, would instead be crying on the day of his death. That's how he accomplished that, by killing all these Jewish nobles. That's who Herod was, in case we need to be clear about that. So you can imagine that when Herod found out that some so-called newborn king of the Jews had just come on the scene, he decided to eliminate the competition. He did not need one more rival to the throne. But Herod had a problem. He didn't know who it was. That's why he asked the Magi when they had seen the star. That's why he asked the prophets in Jerusalem, the priests in Jerusalem, where this child was supposedly born, in Bethlehem. So he narrowed down the time and the place, but still, there were over 100 baby boys born in that time period. They all seemed alike to Herod. No one stood out as special, because to Herod, he could only see with the eyes of the world. So what did Herod do? He just decided to kill them all. Every male child 2 years or younger, he had slaughtered in and around Bethlehem, because Herod could only see with the eyes of the world. I think most of us want to feel special and unique. We want to stand out from the crowd in some way. But the problem is that the world will do everything it can to convince you that you are just one among many, one face in a crowd, another face in a crowd, a dispensable cog in the machinery of humanity, that you're no big deal, small and insignificant. And it's easy to buy into that lie. It really is. It can happen more quickly than you can imagine. The day after Christmas, for instance, I was driving down to Southern California for a little time off. By the way, never drive on the 5 the day after Christmas. The holiday traffic was intense. It was insane. There were so many cars on the road, so many cars, and it slowed everything down. I was in my 2009 Honda Civic, which always makes me a little nervous on long-distance trips. When we hit the Grapevine, you know, that steep incline that you have to go up right before you get into the Los Angeles area, you know, where it says, as signs, it says, turn off your air conditioning or your radiator will explode or whatever. And as my 15-year-old engine started chugging up that hill, I started getting very nervous eyeing the temperature gauge. It was late at night and dark at that point, and there were thousands of other cars crushing onto the Grapevine. And I started thinking to myself, what if I just suddenly broke down right here? What would happen? Would anyone stop? Would anyone in the sea of those cars just coming and coming and coming, would anyone care? Probably not. I was no one special. I was just one car among many. And then my thoughts started turning a little darker. I started wondering whether I was really making a difference in my work, in my ministry. I questioned my abilities. It was a tough ride after that, because I was just seeing myself through the eyes of the world. When I got to my destination, I unpacked and then I opened my computer to try to answer a few emails, and I saw one that had come in from someone who had attended our Christmas Eve Mass. She wrote that she had left in tears because something I said had struck a chord with her, and for the first time she heard the voice of God speaking to her, helping her through a very difficult time in her life. And in that moment, I once again could see myself through the eyes of God. My work mattered. My life mattered. I mattered. Back in 2008, when Pope Benedict XVI came to New York City and celebrated Mass at Yankee Stadium, I was one of the seats way up in the nosebleed section. And when I looked down at Pope Benedict, all I could see was his tiny white speck in the distance. But I knew it was him. We had all come to see him. Everyone knew who he was. But I started wondering what we looked like to him. From his perspective, 60,000 indistinguishable faces, all the same, all looking the same. But see, that's not how God sees us. When we see a crowd, that's all we see is a crowd, a herd of humans, a flock of faces. But as Pastor Max Lucado in his beautiful book, God Whispers Your Name, says, that's not how God sees us. To him, every face is special. Every face has a story. Every person has a name. And every name has a mission and a purpose. God sees you for the unique and wondrous creation that you are. And you can see that too when you see yourself through the eyes of God and not the world. After Jesus was born, three men from the East, we call wise men or magi, you can see them here in our nativity scene. They have been added to the nativity scene. They came to visit Jesus. Now, these were important men, advisors to powerful kings in distant lands. By contrast, the Jewish people, and I mean no respect, disrespect, but the Jewish people at that time in the world were no big deal. They were not prominent. They were not powerful. Everybody wanted their land. They had always wanted their land, and many kings had tried and had been successful in conquering their land over the centuries because it was a natural trading route from the fertile plains in the east to the breadbasket of Egypt in the south. It was very lucrative to occupy that land. But the Jewish people themselves, their culture, their traditions, their strange religious practices, well, that was just more of a nuisance to the conquering kings. The rest of the world looked upon the Jews as this strange oddity, these weird people and their weird beliefs. Even more surprising is the fact that the Magi had a troubled history with the Jewish people. You might remember in the book of Daniel in the Old Testament that the Magi opposed Daniel. These were sorcerers and advisors to the kings, and they challenged Daniel. Daniel prevailed, of course, when he was in Babylon, in captive with a lot of other Jewish people. But you see, there was bad blood between the Magi and the Jewish people. So the Magi would have been among the least expected people to travel so far at such a large expense to visit some newborn king of the Jews. I mean, the rest of the world would look at that and say, who cares? Why is that important? It doesn't matter in the larger scheme of the world. But that's what happened. And it's exactly what Isaiah predicted, as we heard in the first reading today. He spoke of a great light that would shine on the land of Israel and the people of Israel, and that one day all the nations of the world would walk by that light. He said that dignitaries and kings and others would stream to Israel from afar, riding on camels, bringing expensive, valuable gifts like frankincense and gold. And he was right. For some reason, the Magi were able to see what Herod could not see. They could see what others could not see, that this child, this one child, was not one among many, But he was the Messiah. Jesus was the newborn King of the Jews. And so they traveled far and wide to see him and pay him homage. And when they arrived, they didn't just kneel down before Jesus, which would have been a common practice to show reverence to a king. No, they lay flat on the ground. They prostrated themselves before Jesus in an act of worship because they could see in this child his great importance to the world, because they could see through the eyes of God and not the world. In 1941, an obscure songwriter named Catherine Davis sat down by her piano to compose a beautiful Christmas song. Catherine had written over 1,000 songs in her career, but none of them had ever become a hit. And it didn't look like this one would either. As the war raged on in Europe, the American population wanted Christmas songs about loved ones coming home, you know, like I'll Be Home for Christmas. And Catherine's song didn't fit the bill. But then in 1958, 17 years later, with the threat of nuclear war looming on the horizon, a simple, powerful, heartwarming story about a poor boy who wanted to give a gift to the baby Jesus captured the hearts and minds of the American population. And The Little Drummer Boy, written by Catherine Davis, rose to the top of the charts. In real life battles, drummer boys had to be incredibly brave. They would walk in front of the troops, unarmed, keeping time. They didn't have guns, they didn't have bayonets, they weren't trained in battle. All they had to offer was the beat of their drum. In the song, the little drummer boy thought he had nothing much to offer either, nothing really of value. What could he give to a newborn king? All he knew is that he wanted to. His heart's desire was to give Jesus something. Out of desperation, he played his drum for Jesus. It's all that he could offer. He played his best for him. And Jesus smiled because he saw the drummer boy through the eyes of God. My friend Paul also wondered what he could give the Lord. He didn't think he had much to offer. Paul was an extremely successful businessman. He had co-founded one of the top advertising agencies in the country, if not the world. He was a sought-after speaker. He had major accounts, and yet he still wondered what he could offer to God that would be of value. My friend Alex was very successful in the investment world, a self-made man, but he also wondered the same question. Was anything he had worthy of God? And yet, what these two men could not see is that what they wanted to offer was the greatest gift ever, a heart full of desire to please the Lord and to do something wonderful for him. Paul and his wife went on to create an international charity serving the poorest of the poor in India. Alex and his wife are starting a school, a Catholic high school in the city from scratch, a tall order. And Jesus smiles. He smiles because of the desire in their hearts. Jesus smiles on you as well. You matter. You are important. You are God's wonderful creation. You are fearfully, wonderfully made, as Psalm 139 says. You are unique. You are a masterpiece. You are endowed with gifts to carry out his plan and his purpose. We want to help you begin to see yourself more clearly through the eyes of God. That's what this series is all about. We'll be talking about it over the next few weeks. And in Lent, we're going to be launching a major spiritual campaign to help us all grow deeper in our faith and to see ourselves more clearly through the eyes of God. We'll give you everything you need, including a book, a beautiful, inspiring book called Rebuilt Faith, our gift to you when you join one of our small groups for Lent. Small groups are where you can begin to discover your gifts and to grow deeper in your faith among people who will matter to you because they care about you. And when you give the gift of sharing your faith and your life with them, you will matter to them as well. We'll talk more about that in the upcoming weeks. But for now, please know how precious you are in God's eyes, how special and unique you are to Him. You are loved. And every time the Lord turns His face to you, He smiles.